It really is just a coincidence that last Friday was the streaming premiere of a new documentary, Spaceship Earth, about Biosphere 2, a multi-year project from the 1990s when eight people lived together in a structure for 2 years of self-imposed isolation. The group, nicknamed Biospherians, holed up in a three-acre-wide facility in Oracle, Arizona. Now, within this massive structure that was part pyramid, part geodesic dome, part greenhouse, it had a desert, a farm with animals, a forest, even a coral reef. It was the subject of great media interest, some scorn, some admiration, and curiosity. Was this science? Was it a spectacle? What was it exactly? Here's how Mark Nelson described his first days within Biosphere 2.
The reality that it was just the eight of us in this amazing new world started to hit. You can think and think and think and think about, oh, I'm going away for 2 years, but suddenly, wow, we're here. You know, we were pioneers. We were the first Biospherians. There was also this pride. Hey, you've given us a new world to, you know, figure out how to live in, and we're going to grow up with this thing. We're going to take care of it.
Nelson and other Biospherians are featured in the documentary from director Matt Wolff, who was well known for creating documentaries that tell the stories of outstanding outsiders, from experimental musician Arthur Russell to activist Marion Stokes. Spaceship Earth is his latest film exploring the long history of how a collective of theater artists became pioneers. It was picked up for distribution at Sundance this year. It's now streaming on Hulu and at select drive-in theaters. Matt Wolff, welcome to All of It.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I've read in interviews that you first stumbled upon a picture online of the Biospherians. These eight people, they were in red jumpsuits. They kind of looked like Devo, the band. How long was it from seeing that photo to the first day of filming?
Oh, God, it went quickly. This whole process did. But, you know, as soon as I saw that photo and realized that this wasn't a science fiction, you know, film, but it was real, I was determined to tell the story. And it was maybe several months later that my producer, Stacey Reese, and I were at Synergia Ranch, the place where the idea for this project was born. And we were brought into this small temperature controlled room that had hundreds of 16 millimeter films and analog videotapes, thousands of images. And we were just astonished. This group who had been part of this epic project that had mostly faded from collective memory had so rigorously documented their life's work, and it was an incredible opportunity to make a film.
Now we hear from a number of the Biospherians in the doc. How willing were original members of this project? How willing were they to get involved with the film, given their past experience with media?
There was hesitation for sure. It was a big part of my job to earn their trust. I'm drawn to stories which you might call hidden histories, things that have kind of been lost from collective memory. And, 25 years had passed since Biosphere 2's first mission and its kind of rebuke in the media. And so I felt enough time had been passed to reappraise the project because I saw meaningful connections to our plight with climate change today.
Well, tell our audience, what was the original goal of Biosphere 2?
Well, the original goal was twofold. The inventors of the project aimed to create an ecologically closed system, a system that would have the essential ingredients of every biome in the world, you know, a rainforest, a desert, an ocean with a living coral reef. And inside of this sealed atmosphere, eight people called Biospherians would live, and they would feed themselves off of the food that they could harvest on a half-acre plot of land. And, the goal was to ultimately pilot biospheres for Mars colonization. But at the same time, they always recognized that this might be an interesting model for showing sustainable living on Earth. But the group who conceived of the project weren't traditional academic scientists. They were countercultural people with backgrounds as artists and theater performers, adventurers and ecologists, and they were self-trained and outliers in a lot of senses. So this project, as as much as it had rigorous scientific intentions and business aspirations for Mars colonization, it was also a theatrical spectacle that really captured the public's imagination.
Yeah, we learned that the origin story begins in the counterculture in San Francisco, and that they're thespians and artists, and they had this lead figure, John Allen. He's looked up to as the leader of the group, and he's mercurial and charismatic. He's got a strong vision, and everything I just said could be used to describe a cult leader, which some allege that he was. From your interviews with him, what sense did you get of his motivations and ambitions around Biosphere 2?
Yeah, I mean, he was just your typically versatile and mysterious, as you said, mercurial, countercultural leader. And he also had the characteristics we might associate with dot-com innovators, you know, the Elon Musks of the world, in which there's often a cult of personality. And that certainly was the case for John Allen. And, you know, he had this magnetic appeal to young people, and he was able to empower them to pursue things that they didn't think were possible. It was an incredibly ambitious group. Unlike other people in the counterculture, they didn't do drugs. They were workaholics. And they even had a theater company called the Theater of All Possibilities. And I think that, in so many senses, was the ethos of the group. And that was, you know, propelled by John, who really gave this group of people a sense of common mission to pursue anything that they could imagine to be possible.
You said they were workaholics. Describe the work they were doing pre-Biosphere.
Well, they started a ranch, you know, really a commune that was self-sufficient. They were doing the farming and they built it up, and they got restless. They didn't want to just live self-sufficiently on their own land. So they decided to become what they called planetary people. So they got in a school bus, went across the country to the West Coast, and they started to build an enormous concrete sailing ship, which they called the Heraclitus. And as bizarre as that sounds, it's really incredible to see them building this enormous ship. They didn't have those skills. They really learned by doing. And then it worked. They set sail around the world on this ship. And they had partnered with a Texas oil scion named Ed Bass. And he gave them the capital to start all of these business enterprises in the different biomes around the world. Anything from a huge grasslands outpost in the Australian outback to an art gallery in London and a hotel in Kathmandu. And all of these projects kind of synthesized a life experience, taking on the world piece by piece. And it found its greatest expression ultimately in Biosphere 2. And that was because they saw the emerging threat of climate change.
My guest is director Matt Wolf. We're talking about his new documentary, Spaceship Earth. You can see it on Hulu, all about Biosphere 2, its origins and its experience going through the media and how the world reacted to it. So how did the idea for Biosphere 2 come about? We know what it was supposed to accomplish. How did they even start?
Well, they hosted these kind of TED-like conferences at a mansion in the south of France that they ran as an organic farm and conference center. And they brought thought leaders from different scientific and artistic fields together. And that's where this conversation really was ignited, both about climate change and potentially the inevitability of humans occupying an extraterrestrial setting in an ecologically closed system. And there was the idea for an enormous Adobe spaceship that there was a primitive model of. And in its infancy, that was Biosphere 2. But quickly, they kind of descended onto the desert in Arizona, where they found a plot of land and broke ground and declared, John Allen declared, we're going into the space race. And from there, they really collected this kind of diverse group of specialists from different institutions, real academic types who supported the just overall vision of this project. And they started to do the work of creating a Noah's Ark to source thousands of species of plants and animals to bring into this closed system and to do the engineering work that it would take to make something that was truly hermetically closed that could have its own autonomous atmosphere.
Now, as you mentioned, there was great documentation of all of this. And I have to ask you, as a filmmaker, when the Biospherians are going into the biosphere, there is this moment that is unbelievable where they can't get the door closed. You know, it's sort of before editing and would make this all nice and clean. as they were struggling to get the door closed, to actually have it lock and sort of arguing, what went through your mind as a filmmaker?
I mean, there are so many instances where the footage in this film provides these apt metaphors for the story. It was this incredible foreshadowing moment, and I wish I was creative enough to make something like that up, but it actually happened. And this is one of those, stories that's too good to be true. It's a bizarre story with so many twists and turns. And, you know, I make films with a lot of archival footage. I'm used to that. But this was such an exceptional example because it's such a Byzantine story, and every twist and turn has archival footage that shows what happens. It allows the viewer to really feel like you're there, but so much of the story that interested me was the metaphors behind Biosphere 2, this group of people who literally reimagined a world. And the example you're talking about is an incredible moment where the footage speaks volumes behind just showing what happened.
And what do you think that was a metaphor for? The inability to close the door?
It was just foreshadowing that with all this pomp and circumstances and fanfare around this mission and all the aspirations behind it, things weren't going to go as planned.
It's interesting. As you watch the documentary, which is called Spaceship Earth, I'm speaking with its director, Matt Wolf, you see the media circus around this, the thirst for information about it, the sort of breathless coverage. What was the media's role in the success and, as some say, the failure of Biosphere 2?
Well, when the creators of Biosphere 2 brought this project kind of out into the public sphere, they really entered the world stage. They were creating a real theatrical spectacle. And the media was captivated by it and really elevated the reputation and profile of the project. But in that process, some ground rules were defined. Nothing goes in and nothing goes out. And the Biospherians and the managers of this project would be held accountable to those ground rules when, in fact, their intentions and goals were multi-layered and there was a lot of ambiguity about what was going to happen. I think they all knew that this was a pilot run. Who knew what was going to happen? But in the eyes of the media, this was pretty black and white. They were going to either succeed in terms of staying for 2 years, or they were going to fail. And as things started to spiral out of control in this miniature world, the media was watching, and the management, as they failed to be transparent about its tumult, the media became more and more skeptical, and the project came under attack.
Yeah, I don't want to give away too much of things that happen, but there someone is hurt inside the Biosphere, and so they have to leave. But they come back, and that's all we'll say, and that's about that one cliffhanger. There was a lot of pushback from members of the established science community saying, this is just not real science. When you talk to the Biospherians, how do they feel? Do they feel like they were part of some huge scientific experiment? Was it a social experiment? How do they view it?
Well, it was really both things. And I think because of the attacks from the media, there sometimes is a defensiveness about the scientific integrity of the project. But I think from their point of view, they were doing a different kind of science. They weren't doing small-scale experiments that were hypothesis-driven. They were putting a bunch of stuff together inside of this miniature world and seeing what happens. And they rigorously and meticulously measured everything and observed everything to try to understand their world and the consequences of their actions within it. And they were doing tons of experiments, but it didn't exist within the framework of conventional scientific experiments. And like you said, I think the project invites a more expansive definition of experimentation. One of the people from the group that conceived of the project said that they were engaged in a lifetime experiment. And in so many ways, the theater work they did was a kind of experimental artwork, but also this was also a human experiment. This was before reality television shows like The Real World or Big Brother or even Survivor. But this was a glass pyramid that people made pilgrimages to in the middle of the desert to watch 8 people live and work. And it really stoked a kind of voyeuristic curiosity around the world.
And there's quite I'm not going to give it away, but there is quite a sort of Shakespearean turn at the end involving someone, a name that's been in the headlines in the past few years. I'll just leave it there. I'll leave this cliffhanger. Before I let you go, I mean, obviously you made this film years before any of us could have known what the current situation is, would be, and that we would all be self-isolating and staying at home. One, do you think about the movie differently? And two, is there something from the movie and from talking to Biospherians that you think is sort of universal about humans that you see playing out now?
It's interesting because when I finished the movie, I thought it was timely because it's really about a group of people understanding the consequences of their actions in a small scale world and having a personal sense of transformation that forever shifted their consciousness about the bigger closed system of planet Earth. And me, in the context of catastrophic climate change, that felt very significant. And also, as you mentioned, in the final act of the film, there's a kind of contemporary political scoop, which in many senses sabotages their idealistic endeavor. And so I felt that was very true of our world today. But as it became clearer that we were becoming quarantined like the Biospherians, the prescience of the project became uncanny. And I think still that idea of personal transformation is really key. The Biospherian Mark Nelson, who you showed a clip of before, said at the reentry ceremony, being in a small system changes who you are. And that really struck me. And I hope that as a result of the quarantine, we all feel a sense of personal transformation, and that when we reenter the larger world, we have a renewed connection to our impact on the world and our accountability to each other, because the world is far more fragile than we ever understood, and it's on us to protect it.
My guest has been filmmaker Matt Wolfe. His new documentary is called Spaceship Earth. You can see it on Hulu. Matt, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.